TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of useful consciousness. Is nuclear power coming back? Nuclear radiation's impact on life. Until about 100 years ago, scientists believed that all elements were stable and would remain the same after millions of years. Then radioactive substances were discovered that change over time by emitting alpha, beta, gamma, or neutron rays. Uranium is the best known radioactive element. Uranium was apparently formed in supernovae about 6.6 billion years ago. Old stars exploded, and the dust from these shattered stars aggregated to form our planet. Uranium-238 has an extremely long half-life, remaining radioactive for 4.5 billion years, and therefore it is still present in fairly large quantities. Nuclear weapons builders and the nuclear power industry found ways of concentrating uranium and making it exponentially more radioactive and even prone to fission, massive explosions. In the course of using uranium in nuclear reactors, a terrible Faustian bargain was struck. It turned out that burning uranium produces a new man-made material unknown to science, and much more dangerous than uranium, since it is a perfect material for bomb making. That new material is plutonium. Humanity is already facing the daunting task of what to do with the stockpiles of nuclear weapons and nuclear waste that have been produced since the 1940s, and that will remain radioactive for up to a million years. The Bush administration has now secured $4.3 billion in funding to bring online a new set of nuclear power plants. The anti-nuclear campaigner Helen Caldicott, president of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, organized a conference in late 2005 to address the fallout of this decision. After the accident at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania in March 1979, a large popular rebellion had brought all nuclear power plant building in the U.S. to a halt. These safety issues have not only not gone away, but have been urgently brought to world attention by the Chernobyl accident of 1986. We now have ample evidence gathered in the last 60 years of how nuclear radiation harms life. All radiation is cumulative. There are no safe levels. Radiation causes cancers in organs, glands, bones, and blood. But this is about more than the individual deaths from cancer. Radiation affects by mutation the genetic heritage each of us carries in our DNA. The future of life is present today within the bodies of living people, animals, and plants. The whole seed-bearing biosphere. We are now altering the carefully evolved seed by randomly damaging it and passing on that damage to future generations. At Helen Caldicott's conference in November 2005, a session was dedicated to the biological consequences of radiation. Dan Hirsch is president and co-founder of the Committee to Bridge the Gap, a nuclear watchdog group that provides technical and legal assistance to communities near existing or proposed nuclear power projects. He spoke about the efforts of Homeland Security and the Environmental Protection Agency to dramatically increase the permitted exposure levels, while the National Academy of Sciences just concluded that all doses of radiation are dangerous, that there is no safe amount. Here is Dan Hirsch.
In my very brief discussion today, I'm going to try to tell you two or three items which I think are news. Now, you all know that a few months ago, the National Academy of Sciences came out with its 7th report on the biological effects of ionizing radiation. They do this every 10 or 15 years. And this one got a fair amount of coverage for a rather extraordinary finding, which was not extraordinary at all. That was that the National Academy concluded that all doses of radiation are dangerous. There is no threshold. There is not an amount of radiation which is safe. That greater amounts of radiation cause greater risk of cancer. Smaller amounts of radiation produce lower risks of cancer. But there is no safe amount. This was an important finding because there are some people at the extreme wing of the radiation community, deeply tied in with the nuclear industry, who have been arguing that there is a threshold, and some of whom have been arguing a theory called hormesis, which is that, in fact, low doses of radiation are good for you. And the Academy has now made crystal clear that the arguments that low doses are good for you are, frankly, nutty. The arguments that there is a level of radiation below which there is no harm is similarly not founded, and that all doses are harmful. But buried in the report is something far more important and which has gotten very little attention, and that's a single number. It's a number that you should remember, and I want to show you what the implications are of that number. The Academy's official estimate of the risk of cancer is that 1.14 cancers are produced for every 1,000 rem of exposure. That means, for example, if 1,000 people each get one rem, you'll have a little bit more than one person getting cancer from that exposure. Now, that number, you know, just seems like an abstract number. But let's talk about what that means in the universe of radiation protection. And I'm going to start with the most astonishing number, absolutely most astonishing. I saw this number about 10 years ago in an appendix to a General Accounting Office report that no one else noticed. Workers are permitted 5 rem per year, each year that they work. Okay? So if you worked for 50 years in the nuclear industry, you would have gotten 250 rem. Taking the National Academy's figure, that produces one cancer out of every 3.5 people exposed. Now, I want you to think about that. You know the old story when you show up at a lecture hall, a tough teacher, they say, look to your left, look to your right. One of you isn't going to pass this class. Imagine showing up as a worker, your first day at work in a nuclear facility, and being told that if you got the permissible dose, never went over it, but got the permissible dose every single year you worked, one out of every 3 or one out of every 4 of you would get a cancer from that exposure. You would have real trouble being able to get people to work in the industry. But that's because that number has never been made public. Now, it's clear no one gets 5 rem a year in the nuclear industry every year. The industry is very pleased to say people get a small fraction of the permissible. Assume it's 10%. Is it acceptable that one out of every 30 or 40 workers would get a cancer from their radiation exposure? It's an absolutely flabbergasting number. Now, let me give you a couple other numbers that are equally flabbergasting and are news. The Department of Homeland Security has a guidance document which is about to be issued in the Federal Register on what doses to the public would be permitted after a dirty bomb without any long-term cleanup. They tell the public don't worry about dirty bombs, that they can't really cause anything but fear, and the private guidance says that the doses could be so high that it would not be cost-effective to clean it up, and they would have to permit doses of 10 rem a year. And assume that you only get that for 30 years. That you're only in the same office or the same home for 30 years, an assumption the government often uses, although lots of people are in their homes for much longer. 10 rem a year for 30 years, again, is a 1 in 3 risk of cancer. They're so embarrassed about this that they've held up the guidance now for months to say that we would permit people to get 10 rem a year. Now, let me give you a third number, which you have probably heard in the press, but again, the significance of it, you may not have been told. You know that the Environmental Protection Agency was required by law to come up with a standard for public exposures from Yucca Mountain High-Level Waste Repository. And they initially set a standard of 15 millirem per year, 0.015 rem per year. But they cut that off after 10,000 years. The reason for that was pretty clear. DOE had said that the canisters initially would start degrading at about 11 or 12,000 years. And that the peak doses would be at about 200 or 300,000 years. So they created a standard that DOE could meet. It's like the old joke. You jump off the top of the Empire State Building, you pass the first few floors, so far, so good. Well, first 10,000 years, so far, so good. But that's because DOE had estimated that they would have doses of hundreds of millirem per year, somewhere between 200 and 300,000 years out. So the EPA cut the calculation off at 10,000 years. The court said that's illegal. You're supposed to follow the National Academy's recommendation. So EPA, a few months ago, came out with a new standard for the dose from 10,000 years on to a million years, 350 millirem a year. You have to understand that's 23 times higher than any dose limit EPA has ever said is protective of the public. What is 350 millirem a year? That equals a 1 in 36 risk. One out of every 36 people exposed, according to the Academy, and the official government risk estimates now would come down with cancer from yucca. And remember, this is not just for a year or two. These are releases that would go on for generation after generation after generation. So for us to establish nuclear power to produce a little bit of electricity for us in this generation and then produce 500,000 years of leaking radioactivity producing doses that are unacceptable anywhere in the world is extraordinary. One other number to remember. EPA regulates all carcinogens historically at a risk level of between 1 in a million and 1 in 10,000. It's never said anything over 1 in 10,000 risk is acceptable. So to get yucca approved, they have relaxed it by orders of magnitude. Now, one other piece of news for you. EPA has sent over to the Office of Management and Budget proposed new guidance for radiation exposures generally from nuclear activity. And they are proposing relaxing their radiation standards by an order of magnitude, permitting doses of 100 millirem a year for all sorts of nuclear activity. And that risk is 1 in 125. Again, orders of magnitude outside the acceptable EPA range. EPA years ago said 100 millirem was completely unprotective of public health and safety and said that radiation should not be a privileged pollutant in which risks are much higher than you are permitting any other carcinogen. And now under this administration, they have decided to abrogate 3 decades worth of regulation and permit doses vastly higher. So if they believe nuclear is so safe, if they believe yucca could work so well, watch the numbers. There's an old saying, don't watch a politician's mouth, watch their feet. If feet are shifty, you know they're lying. Watch the numbers. The mouth says nuclear power is safe. The feet say it's so dangerous we can't get licensed unless we relax standards to levels that would permit exposures and deaths that are in the range of 1 in 3, 1 in 10. One other development, amazing piece of news. At the end of the National Academy study is an appendix of a new study that came out after they had done most of their work. It was authored by many of the Academy members. And these are people who are very pro-radiation, I've got to tell you. This is not something coming from the anti-nuclear component at all. And that new study says that is of the largest pooling of all nuclear workers in the world. They took 15 countries and over 400,000 nuclear workers and pooled them to get more statistical power. And in some ways, they may have actually underestimated because you lose some discrimination doing that. But they have discovered from that pooling, published just recently in the British Medical Journal, that the actual effect measured in nuclear workers at low doses is 4 times higher than the figure the Academy just came out with. Now, all of you have immediately figured out what that means. If the risk is 4 times higher than the Academy's estimate, 5 rem a year over 50 years approaches 100% chance of cancer. 10 rem a year for 30 years approaches 100% chance of cancer. And the doses for members of the public get down to nearly 1 in 10. So watch the numbers. What this comes down to is the real truth about nuclear power, is that the proponents of it know it is so dangerous that they have to have permission to kill a large fraction of the people that's exposed. And the morality of that has never been exposed and never been discussed.
That was Dan Hirsch, co-founder of the Committee to Bridge the Gap, a nuclear watchdog group. He spoke at a conference organized by the anti-nuclear campaigner Helen Caldicott. In half a century of tireless activism against nuclear weapons, she has always taken the approach of a physician in defense of life. Here's Helen Caldicott explaining how radiation damages life.
Pretend you're at first year medical school. So there are four forms of radiation, gamma and X-rays, which are non-particulate. We've all been X-rayed. The largest purveyor of radiation today is the medical profession. Gamma radiation comes from nuclear materials. Alpha radiation is composed of a particulate mass, two protons and two neutrons. It doesn't travel very far. It's very dense. It doesn't get through the dead layers of epidermis to damage living cells. But if it gets into the lung or body tissues, this alpha radiation is extremely carcinogenic. Beta radiation is an electron particulate emitted from an unstable atom. There are neutrons. I won't go into that today. What I need to say, though, is all radiation is cumulative. You must never have any radiation unless it's absolutely medically indicated. Don't have defensive X-rays. Don't ever have your teeth X-rayed every year. If you have a root abscess, you need a dental X-ray. That's all. If you have pneumonia, you need an X-ray. The benefit is great, and the damage is minimal. Now, the way that radiation causes cancer is significant. The body's made of trillions of cells, 46 chromosomes arranged in pairs, and in every cell there's a gene that controls the rate of cell division called the regulatory gene. And if that's hit by an alpha particle or gamma or whatever, I missed that one, it's very random, then that DNA molecule changes biochemically. The latent period or incubation time for cancer is any time for children 2 to 70 years. We know this from the Hiroshima data. And so you don't know a cell's been damaged, your regulatory gene is damaged. One day, maybe 20 years later, the cell starts dividing by mitosis, but instead of being regulated, it produces trillions of cells, and that's a cancer. And we're not very good at regulating or stopping cancer growth. Some cells can be very aggressive. They infiltrate into a capillary and go into the brain and grow into a secondary cancer or a metastasis. Eventually, they spread throughout the body. The patient declines. The cancer survives, and then both die. So it's really a parasite. So it takes a single mutation in a single cell. I'm being simplistic, but go with it, to kill you. Now, there are certain cells in the body that are much more important than normal body cells, and they're called the germ cells, the egg and the sperm. And in every one of these, there are half the number of chromosomes, so when they get together, you have the normal number of chromosomes and genes. Now, genes come in pairs, and genes control who we are. I'm like my mother, I've got fierce eyes like her, a bit of an intellect like her, I've got a red-headed, freckled skin like my father. We all carry several hundred genes for disease. And mutations caused by radiation mostly cause damaged genes, or they're called deleterious mutations. Now, when the Earth was very hot, eons of time ago, radiologically speaking, there were many mutations. And so we evolved. But most mutations over time have been producing disease and death, deleterious. Now we're in relative harmony and balance, although we think that the background radiation produces a fair number of mutations still. And mutations that are induced by radiation, be it background, medical or the like, in germ cells. There are about 3,000 genetic diseases now described. About 500 are dominant. Recessive mutations are hidden. And we all carry several hundred recessive genes for disease. And as radiation increases in the environment and recessive genes increase in frequency, it may take up to 20 generations for two recessive genes to get together to induce disease. Now, we are increasing the background level of radiation, not just from medicine, severely in medicine at the moment, from medical fluoroscopies for cardiac examinations and from CT scans and the like. But what we're doing by fissioning uranium is, over time, and it's not just now, it will be over time, increasing the background level of radiation, and it's not external. The materials produced in reactors are internal emitters. So all materials made in reactors get inside us. There are 200 isotopes produced. Some have very short half-lives, and some have extremely long half-lives. So I-131, and a lot got out of Three Mile Island, has a half-life of 8 days, and it's around for about 6 weeks. Radioactive iodine and the other isotopes bioconcentrate by orders of magnitude at each step of the food chain. Grass, cows, cow's milk, human breast milk, babies. And if strontium 90 locates in a breast, a lactating breast, that could induce breast cancer by mutating a regulatory gene. And as strontium 90 is a calcium analog, it goes to bone where it can cause bone cancer and leukemia, or leukemia. Half-life 28 years, and it's around for 600 years. These two are beta and gamma emitters. I131 is a potent carcinogen for the thyroid gland, but particularly in children who are up to 10 times more sensitive to radiation, the carcinogenic effects, than adults, because their cells are actively dividing. And when the genes are being synthesized, that's when they're so vulnerable to being damaged by radiation. Over 8,000 people in Belarus and the Ukraine now have had thyroid cancer diagnosed, people who were young, children, when that accident occurred. The truth is, these people got thyroid cancer. They've all had their thyroids out. Now, you can't live without your thyroid gland. You have to have thyroxine replacement every day or you die. Strontium 90, as I said, causes bone cancer and leukemia. Cesium-137 is a beta and a gamma, half-life 30 years. It's around for 600 years. There are over 300 farms in England now growing lambs, and they can't sell their lambs because they're full of cesium-137. So they put them on other pastures to try and dilute the cesium-137 in the flesh. It's a potassium analog. Potassium is rich in every cell of the body. This causes a rare form of tumour called rhabdomyosarcoma, a muscle tumour, and it also can cause cerebral tumours, brain cancers. A lot of cesium still exists all around Europe, in the reindeer in the north, the lichen in Turkey. I don't eat European food because much of it's still radioactive and will remain so for 600 years. Last but not least, and then I end here, we all know about plutonium because that's what you make bombs out of. But from my point of view, it's interesting because it's an iron analogue. It does not get absorbed from the gut except in immature guts in neonates. It's absorbed better from the gut in chlorinated water. Much of our water is chlorinated. If inhaled into the lung, it's translocated to the mediastinal lymph glands where it gets to be solubilized, so it can cause lung cancer, highly carcinogenic, alpha emitter. It can cause leukemia by damaging the lymphocytes. It then combines with the iron transporting protein transferrin stored in the liver, where it can cause liver cancer, bone, because that's where the red blood cells are made, where it can cause bone cancer and leukemia. And unlike many other substances, it crosses the placenta in the developing embryo, where it can damage a cell. That's called teratogenesis. And last but not least, plutonium has a predilection for the testicle, where it locates just next to the spermatogonia, the precursors of the sperm, where it can damage genes in the sperm. And those abnormal genes get then passed on generation to generation, 20 or 30 generations, while the plutonium, with a half-life of 24,400 years, lives on to get into testicle after testicle for the rest of time. And so we have an exponential increase in genetic malformations. And it's not the only isotope that gets into the testicle. Every male in the northern hemisphere has a tiny amount of plutonium in his testicle now from weapons testing days, and the stuff's still falling out from the stratosphere. We wonder why the incidence of testicular cancer is rising. Probably one reason is that. And I'm sorry it was so brief, but that's just a very quick medical description.
That was Helen Caldicott. She's president of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute and the author of numerous books on nuclear and environmental issues. The last speaker is David Richardson. He is assistant professor of epidemiology in the School of Public Health at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
I'm going to be talking about the idea of susceptibility or vulnerability to radiation. The suggestion that very low levels of exposure to radiation might be carcinogenic, and surprisingly carcinogenic, to the fetus came from a case control study that was done in England in the 1950s. So this was a landmark study in which children who died from any form of cancer were matched to a living child who was born on roughly the same day, lived in the same administrative district in England, and was the same sex as a childhood case. And then the mothers were interviewed of the children. And what the study was suggesting was that a radiographic examination of the mother's abdomen, if that occurred during pregnancy, you were approximately going to double the risk of a child developing cancer. And these results were supported then 2 years later when they updated the study with information from 1956 and 57. And then they were replicated by Brian McMahon, who I think may have been the chair of epidemiology at Harvard at the time, in a study of childhood cancers in New England, in which they tried to address the question, well, maybe the mothers of the children with cancer had recall bias. And so they went back to medical records in the Northeast and confirmed all the medical X-ray exposures. And it's been subsequently replicated in about 15 studies around the world, all of them leading to essentially the same conclusion as the original Oxford survey. You can pool the results of all the studies except the Oxford survey and get essentially the same risk estimate. But there have been a lot of other interesting insights from the Oxford survey. If children who had two X-rays or three X-rays during pregnancy, the risk continued to increase with increasing number of X-ray exams. And the risk for children who were X-rayed in the second and third trimesters of pregnancy was about a 30% excess risk of childhood cancer. But those who were exposed in the first trimester had a threefold increase in childhood cancers. So the central point that I want to leave with is basically that the population is not kind of homogenous, because there's some subgroups in the population that may have manyfold times that risk of a radiation-induced cancer.
That was David Richardson, Assistant Professor of Epidemiology in the School of Public Health at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You heard the second part of a mini-series on the urgent question, are nuclear power plants coming back to the USA? The next program covers routine releases and accidents at existing nuclear reactors. Thanks to the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, Helen Caldicott's organization, for making the recordings available. Visit their website at www.nuclearpolicy.org. That's nuclearpolicy.org. You can find links to the speakers on the TUC Radio website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your CD or tape order is essential in keeping us on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE. For information on how to order, you can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.